Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Here, you want to say something?
You want to say something?
No. Get that sniff of ASMR in
good
there.
Good girl. So we're recording at my place because...
Yeah, and Geneva's joining us.
Yes, that's exactly my dog, Lilia. Yeah, your place is too damn hot.
Yeah, it's way too damn hot. I've been sweating like a pig. It was 85 there the other day.
Jesus.
I bought another standalone air conditioner, but it's not coming until Tuesday for some reason.
Oh, fun.
And if you're going to exploit your workers' Amazon, you could at least get my things there on time.
Yeah.
That's the bargain we made. Hey, I know. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, if you're going to interrupt, I love you. If you're going to interrupt, we're going to have to send
we
you to the office.
We should have kept the Geneva bit going. No. Should have kept it going for a bit.
If you're going to interrupt, we got to send you to the office, okay? To my office. Are you good?
Yeah,
you going to be good?
Geneva's there because of the podcast, and she just sniffled and licked a bun. What's going on with her? She okay?
Good girl.
Good girl.
Good girl.
Yeah, that's how I was. I was panting all day. I'm behind on work. I was just so sluggish.
Oh, no. It's part because she's hot and part because she's nervous because new person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what she does when she gets nervous. Is she just heavy pants? I don't know if it's what all dogs do. I don't know enough about them, but it is her tell.
Pugs do. It's what pugs do.
Okay, that makes sense.
I've only had a lot of experience with pugs.
Hell yeah. Good girl.
I once was sleeping at a friend's house with a pug named Sophie,
mm-hmm.
and I was having this dream, and then I slowly pull out of the dream by no. And I woke up, and it's Sophie, no! And the pug was on my chest, staring me directly in the face, and it's going, and they're like, and I'm like, what's up? And all over my face, it runs off. Hey,
no teeth.
No teeth. I know I'm bony.
Okay, pause.
This is definitely one I'm going to want to do a redux on at some point.
Yeah.
Because I pulled you. I watched this a couple days ago because I had a haircut today.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sweating and drinking to avoid the sweating.
Sure.
I'm sure I have much more in-depth things to say, but I need to watch it again. I can say without a doubt, I love the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I can speak to it in a coherent manner outside of generic things I like.
That's so fair.
I was laying on the couch just drinking Miller and I had to I had to wipe the sweat out of my I had a cup. That's the noise of my eye squeezing my eyes. I was filling that up because all the sweat was awful.
So, yeah, we're definitely going to do a redux of this episode. But I don't know if there is as stark of a difference in any director's filmography between a first and second movie than Blood Simple to Raising Arizona. No, you can find stark differences across entire filmographies.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of first and second.
And it was done on purpose. After making Blood Simple, which was the movie they knew they could get made, they wanted their second movie to be so starkly different to never have anyone put them in a box ever.
That's fair, because it's very different.
It's basically a slapstick crime comedy.
It's nuts. My favorite thing about this movie is this is one I think I've seen before. I just have no recollection of it because I watch it at an age that I'm realizing. Probably not the appropriate time to watch it.
Okay.
Because I was real young, and I'm like, I'm not sure if this is a movie for the real young.
Nicolas Cage and Holly Hunter, they're so attractive. Both of them.
It is.
Both of our leads are just.
If you shave the mustache off Nicolas Cage, she becomes the ultimate twink.
They're stunningly beautiful. Almost distracting.
He's also real. He looks like hot men today.
Yes.
I think is really interesting. He looks like a hot rat boy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I forgot that this movie starts off the very, very beginning of it as enemies to lovers.
Yes.
Which is my favorite genre of X-reader. I was glad to see that.
I forgot this movie started off with 11 minutes of narration.
Oh, it's a Coen Brothers
and
movie.
It flies by. No, I knew it started with narration. I just didn't realize it was as long as it was. And I didn't realize it was as long as it was until I checked the timer and it was 11 minutes.
Yeah, there's a lot of narration in this movie. And a lot of good... Is that how they talk in Arizona? I've never been.
Does anyone talk in Arizona?
Are they in they're in Arizona, right?
Yeah. They're in Tulsa.
Like, is that how they talk? Is that the accent down there?
I could not tell you.
I always assumed it was like, hey, yo, because of New Vegas.
My entire
concept of Nevada as a state is a bunch of people like, bada bing, bada boom, want to play some roulette? Ring-a-ding-ding. And then, like, the killers. That's the two type of people I live in, and autists because of Criminal Minds.
Yes, I know more about people from New Mexico than I do Arizona.
I'm thinking of Nevada.
I know you're thinking of Vegas.
No,
I was like, the killers are from
Vegas. I have
no
concept of Arizona. So my concept of Arizona is that it's Nevada.
It's not. Yeah, it's not Nevada.
What's in fucking Arizona? Who's from Arizona? The T
bands from Arizona. Jimmy Eat World. AJJ.
AJJ's from Arizona. Okay. People from Arizona.
The Maine.
Stevie Nicks.
Oh, good for her.
You know what? That makes sense that they're from AJJ's from it because so is Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, okay.
Who they mentioned quite a few times.
Nice.
Geronimo?
I love... The Coen brothers are so good at giving you...
Sorry, did they show the flag in this movie?
I don't know.
Because they have, like, the coolest flag.
I don't remember
seeing
that flag.
That's a cool fucking flag, dude.
The Coen brothers are so good at giving you tiny details, like, right away that tell you everything you need to know about the character. While also, like, while Nick Cage, who plays H.I. McDonough, he is explaining everything that's going on, and then they have interstitials like when he gets arrested from robbing the convenience store, and Holly Hunter plays Ed, short for Edwina, is the cop who's taking the photos as he's coming in. And
what a fucking name. Edwina.
And when she's crying during the photos, and he's asking why, and she says, "My fiance broke up with me," when she means fiance. That one line of dialogue.
I assume that's just how they spoke down there.
Yeah?
That's the accent. I was watching a video about Ohio accents recently, and they're similar, like milk and steel. And
is it not pronounced steel?
Apparently it's more like steel. Well, the way, like, if you're talking fluent Ohio, and apparently if you're like, I'm going to steal that, we kind of shorten it a lot.
I have no idea. The problem
is Ohioans have an accent, but it's also like the broadcasting accent a lot of the times.
Yeah, because we have the college in Cleveland.
So we just don't. It's hard to tell. You're like, that's what Americans sound like. It's like, no, we got twang. We don't say fiance. What was it?
Fiance.
My
fiance dumped me.
He scoops in, man. I get it.
He's
a hero.
I need you to know that I think he's a damn fool.
He's a hero. That's my ideal meet cute.
And when he slips the finger, when he slips the ring on the finger the next time he gets arrested, just like, that happens so quickly.
That's my ideal meet cute, is that I meet someone, it's enemies to lovers, we're on opposite sides of the law, and then immediately we're married.
Sure.
I don't want there to be like a dating period.
So, but when he swoops in there, like, he is such a smooth criminal. And when he slips the ring on the finger and then just goes, by the way, I paid for it. Beautiful. Tells you everything you need to know about that relationship.
The ideal relationship.
Yeah.
You find a woman who just is crying over her fiance and you get married like some period of time later. I'm not sure. Probably months, right? Because he goes to prison.
8 to 14 months every time. This is the first collaboration between John Goodman and the Coen brothers.
Is it?
And it's their second movie.
I spent a lot of time being like, is this discount John Goodman?
No, it was John Goodman before he lost the weight. I don't know the time period. I don't know
if
this is
like... So they got
him
young. They got him early.
Yeah. I don't know if this is like peak drinking and cocaine John Goodman or not.
I didn't know he was with them for so long.
Yeah, since movie two, baby. one of the greatest actors to ever live.
Which is wild, because he did Roseanne. You know, that's something I always think about. It's like, John Goodman is this one of the greatest actors who ever lived.
Yeah.
And he did, like, Roseanne.
Yeah, he wanted that steady TV money.
Yeah, I just don't put Roseanne as, like, I guess it had, like, a really big sitcom. But I never think of it as, like, one of the big sitcoms.
Sure.
And it's like, and John Goodman. It's not about him, either. That's what's wild to me. It's like...
But almost every one I hear, like, when they talk about Roseanne, they specifically mention how good John Goodman
is. Yeah, which is, like, it's nuts. It's like if you're watching, like, I'm trying to think of, like, someone who's had a sitcom but wasn't too famous. I'm going to say Bill Cosby. I guess it's like if you had the Bill Cosby show and, like, a steady character that was there every episode was his brother, like, O.J. Simpson. Like, someone just so much more famous than he is.
Sure.
Like, as a steady... Because, like, I know Friends had Brad Pitt on.
Paul Rudd, when Paul Rudd was not Paul Rudd.
He wasn't, like, famous.
He was the dude from Clueless, and he... I don't remember if he did Wet Hot American Summer yet.
But, like, they had, like, peak Brad Pitt, yeah. Which is nuts.
Well, yeah, because he was married to Jennifer Aniston.
He was, yeah. No, I didn't even put that together. I just figured he was a fan of the show. Do you know, on average, you see a black person every 8 episodes of Friends?
That's fascinating, considering they live in New York.
There's one character who's black, and she's in it the most. She's in it for 9 episodes, which is about 3%. And that's the only... There's, like, maybe 6 reoccurring black characters, and she's in there for the longest stretch of time.
And 9 episodes?
Yep, 3%.
It's... How do you have a show set in New York City?
In any metropolitan area?
I mean, any metropolitan area. But especially, like, the melting pot of the USA.
There's all... Like, it's all white people in that movie. In that show. There's, like, very few... I'm trying to think of people who are, like, even, like, an Asian... Just a bunch of white. Joey's Italian, so I guess it counts. But
Gunter's a German immigrant, so.
Yeah. I think I counted more if he's like a Polish. Is there?
Also, I was unaware. I had completely forgotten how offensive Glenn was toward the Polish people.
Yeah, I know. I was going to bring that up at some point.
I forgot to warn you. I had forgotten myself.
Hate speech movie.
We really were watching a very man tell horrible Polish jokes.
People say all the time to me, Matthew, Polish people are a minority. Matthew, you can't keep saying Black Pride and raising your fist anytime someone says they're going to get pierogies or mentions the word kibasi. But then, you know, I'm going to show them this movie and say there's still hate for us in this country.
Yeah, in 1988, there was still hate for
I got it called country. A Polack 3 years ago.
Okay. Also, the coworker at the sheet metal sheet metal plant. I forget the actor's name off the top of my head, but he's Bubba from Blood Simple.
I didn't know they made sheet metal in a plant. I thought they dug it out of the ground.
You just thought they came from, like, there were just, like, plant, there were just, like, thin sheets of...
Slate?
Sure. Sure, I guess.
Tons of rocks are flat.
Okay, but metal in the sense of, like, sheet metal is processed.
I thought that's why it's so hard to be, like, a metal miner, is because you have to, like, get that through the tunnels.
Ah.
You're like, oh, fuck, turn it, big damn it. It won't get through.
Pivot.
Wouldn't have happened if there's a single minority moving that couch, I tell you. It's the dumbness. The one chance they had of getting that couch up successfully was the Italian, and he was dumb.
I love this movie. We are going to do a Redux episode of this, for real. The weather and life is, like, very much making this episode weird and distracting, but I love this movie, and I need
it's really
everyone
good.
To know.
It's really good. I don't understand the premise, personally.
Okay.
The whole time I'm watching this movie... And in my head, I'm like, I'd be doing the opposite of, I'd be constantly trying to get rid of this
you
baby.
You don't relate to
that. I don't relate to the, and, like, and then the criminals grab the baby. I'm like, why are you getting this baby?
They want the ransom.
Yeah, but then they're, like, worried about it and stuff.
Yeah, because it's a baby.
Yeah, if I'm giving it up for ransom.
But they have the scene where the baby looks at Evel and is like, oh, he looked at me like it was like he had the scene where they open up to the baby being a person.
I think that there should be a point where like, oh, what's his name? The guy who sticks out in this movie, Sam?
Okay.
Saul.
The
bounty hunter.
Oh, Lenny.
It's Lenny's the bounty hunter?
Leonard Smalls.
Smalls. Okay, Smalls is what I was aiming for. The guy who's like, why are you from Mad Max? You're so weirdly out of place in this movie. Like, if perhaps instead of High like doing the grenade, the baby shot him.
Or if the baby did the grenade. Or
the baby did the grenade. I just like personally like the shot of like he gets shot and he falls over. Or maybe it shoots the grenade or something. I don't know.
Sure.
And then it pans over and the baby has the gun.
Hell yeah,
I think
dude.
That'd be really good. Because it's also really funny because you're just putting a prop gun next to a baby. And it's clearly the baby did not shoot this gun, but that is creating that illusion, and that's funny.
So
it's funny when you pan to a baby in something and it's clearly set up to be doing something a baby can't do, but you're like, in fiction the baby did it. Who killed Mr. Burns? It's the whole premise.
Leonard Smalls is a bounty hunter. From Mad Max.
He's so dirty.
But High and Ed are infertile. They cannot have children. Edwina is infertile and High cannot impregnate her.
The dream.
And so, sure. And so the solution, they find out that a famous furniture paint store owner,
like Mr. Laverne,
the Arizona family, hence the title Raising Arizona.
They found Arizona?
No, he changed his name.
Oh, he changed his name.
Yes, because no one's going to buy from unpainted Crumlets or whatever his actual last name is. So Nathan and his wife, Nathan Sr. and his wife, oh my God, it's like Franny, something like that. Alice, which I don't.
What amount of names that stuck to my brain? My wet brain are few.
One of those names, and they had Quince, and so the solution that Ed comes up with for High is that High will steal one of the Quince.
Yeah, because they can't adopt because he's a criminal.
They explicitly say in the paper it's almost too much for us to handle, which is just a fun one-off thing that the business owner says to the
press. Must have been an awful pregnancy. Five children in the Arizona heat. Just blowed like a fucking whale, sweating. Because I know it's bad enough to have a summer pregnancy, but like an Arizona summer pregnancy where you got five children in you? I don't think you could even walk.
I have thoughts, but yes.
That's a big tummy!
That is a big tummy. She was so thin when they stole the babies.
They used that furniture money to fix her up.
Her body snapped the fuck back. Like, so they named their babies Harry, Barry, Larry, Gary with two R's, and Nathan Jr.
Yeah. I mean, when you have five kids at once, what are you going to do?
But you can, there are other names that exist.
You want to get knock it out?
I just, if you're going to name, and I know that's the joke, but if you're going to name four of your kids together...
Well, you want to know which one's the favorite. You want those kids growing up knowing that one of them's the favorite.
That's the joke, yes. So High is trying to steal this kid, and he's causing a ruckus upstairs in what turns into a horror movie, which truly makes me think the Coen brothers can direct a horror movie, because I know you feel nothing when children are in danger, but the tension that they pulled off with putting those children in danger.
I thought it was fun. Buster Keaton slapstick, honestly.
No, it was
a new perspective.
It was genuine horror.
That's how I name my kids if I had kids, honestly, or name it something like Tundra, because you see all these savannas, but there's no other biomes. Why is there any like tundras? Jungle.
Honest, I can't see someone naming their kid Jungle. I can see someone naming their kid Tundra.
Call him Tundy.
But a thing noticed is when he's causing a ruckus upstairs and the wife, I forget her name and I feel bad, but the wife says, that sounds like Larry. And Nicolas Cage is holding one of the childs. He's holding Harry.
I mean, to be fair.
I mean, when you have five kids and they're all babies, you're not going to be able to tell them apart.
There's no way. I'm convinced most people's parents aren't their parents, and they just kind of grab. Like, there's got to be so many mix-ups we don't know about. What? Right? Like, all babies look the same.
Have you heard of a couple years ago when the nurse got caught switching like 5,000 kids at birth over the course of 20 years?
Just for fun?
Yeah, over the course of like 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she rocks. Is she single?
I don't. She's probably in prison.
This can be our Raising Arizona moment. I gotta go become a cop! What a queen. What a fucking queen, though.
But I heard somewhere, and I agree, I kind of agree with this, that right there, if they can track down those kids, is the ultimate study of nature versus nurture. Remove the ethics. I mean, it's already done. You don't have to, like...
Sometimes you need...
Unfortunately,
you
what
need bad people.
Yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't know how hot a person can survive in if it weren't for the Nazis. We got a lot of interesting research we use to this day for medical reasons out of Nazis and the Japanese shit. Just because they were like, I have absolutely no ethics. How hot can a human be?
Yeah.
How cold can a human be?
Also, when Nicolas Cage is causing a ruckus and the two parents, Nathan and his wife, are just staring at each other and then staring up at the ceiling, bro, there's thudding and like child mouth noises, like voices coming from your upstairs. Go check on your kid.
I mean, to be fair...
Immediately, go check on your kid.
To be fair, I wouldn't assume someone's trying to steal a baby.
I would assume something happened. I would assume one of my kids fell. If I hear a huge thud, or if I hear thud come from, like, thumping come from the nursery, I'm going to assume one of the kids fell.
But it's like a really loud thug, right?
Yeah.
I don't think a baby would make that loud of a thud. So.
That's even more of a reason to go check
no,
on
No, it's
them.
Okay.
No, that's even... more of a reason to go check on them. Oh, this part of the movie is an existential horror movie. Babies are just suicidal. They're just little suicidal. They're constantly trying to kill themselves. And your entire goal as a parent
played,
for the first little while is to keep them from killing themselves. At one point, High comes back and is like, they're crying. They're going to come check on him. We can't do this. And Ed's just resolved in the car is like, I'm not leaving until we have this kid.
Women.
Go back and get this kid.
Women
and
women.
And so he does get a kid. And it's probably Nathan Jr., who he thinks is the best one.
Yeah, obviously.
And Ed's like, all babies are beautiful God's creatures. And High just goes, yeah, but there's something about this one, right? He's a stallion. Also, I love that they kept calling him Nathan Jr., that they didn't agree on a name at any point.
No, they keep telling people we're going to decide on a name, and everyone just accepts that. And it's like, something was put on the birth certificate. Like, you had to have a name.
Well, yeah.
You can't just be like, I'm going to name it later.
Can you?
I think you have to put something on the birth certificate. The dad doesn't have to put his name on the birth certificate.
Do you have to? Okay.
But the baby does.
Can you decide a baby's name after birth? Okay, that was a bad way to phrase that question. Does a name need to be placed on the birth certificate before leaving the hospital? Parents do have the option to be discharged prior to naming their infant.
What?
Yeah, that's insane.
Is there a time limit? Or could it be like my kid's 6 years old and I'm like, you know what? You seem like a real Tony to me. It's time to give you a name.
I don't know.
You just call them by their social security
How
number?
How long? You have 60 days.
That's a ridiculously long amount of time.
But the day that Nathan comes to the comes home and they have this big welcome home party, John Goodman and his plays Gale and his brother Evel Snoots, they Shawshank their way out of prison.
The dream.
They erupt from the mud and Gale just pulls his little brother out.
You think prisons would have like underground cops, because it seems to be a very easy way to get out of prison. You see it in Looney Tunes, you see it in Shawshank, you see it in Raising Arizona. You can just dig your way out of prison. They should be like mole cops. Like cops who like no family.
Cops.
No family. They're not actual moles, because I don't think a mole could fire a gun.
Moles are also blind.
Yeah. Also, moles, firm believers in ACAB. But you have like a a guy, he has no family, and he spends like 10 years. You have a 10-year shift, and you just go underground. Like you dig a hole and they bury it beneath you. You just go around the prison, you eat worms, and you just, if anyone's getting out, you catch them.
So they
this is my new hit TV show. Mole Cop. We're getting Nathan Fillion. He's done with the rookie. He's coming on Mole Cop.
So they Shawshank their way out of prison, and the FBI is and the local cop police.
An hour of television, just a camera in front of someone's face, like a night vision one, and they're in a dirt tunnel, and they're just digging.
You have to think, this isn't just 1 hour of television. This is 24, this is 22 to 24 hours of television a year.
I know. It's all just... The set's just a big box of dirt. We put them in.
So the FBI are investigating Nathan Jr.'s disappearance because he wasn't abducted by aliens.
Is that an FBI crime?
What?
Is that an FBI crime?
They're a high-profile family. That's what I took it as.
I guess.
That's what I took it as. They're a high-profile
family. I guess
family.
The FBI was the FBI involved with the Lindbergh baby? Because isn't the FBI only like involved when it's like across, if it's a federal crime or it's like across state boundaries?
Maybe they think it's across state lines.
Maybe. But maybe they don't know what state they're in because they're all square down there.
Yeah, exactly. I like where you're thinking. And it leads to one of the most clever...
Mole cops don't have no jurisdiction.
It leads to one of the most clever, like, just Coen Brothers line moments where Nathan says, well, the police don't know the difference, wouldn't know the difference between a lead and a hole in the ground. And then it immediately cuts to canine units sniffing a hole in the ground. Everyone in this movie... We're going to be all over the place. This is...
Yeah, I'm kind of hooked into the Mole Cop fantasy right now. I'm sure it'll wear off, but right now I'm really hooked on to... We should stop making this podcast and start producing the hit NBC drama.
If you want to get together and write a pilot, I'm down. Real talk, I am. I'm
we
off.
We could film it for so little money. We just need a big box of dirt.
I'm so distracted. A thing I find very interesting is that everyone in this movie calls Nick Cage's character High, except for John Goodman, who calls him H.I. Every single time he calls him H.I., which I find fascinating that that's their relationship. Is it John Goodman trying to step into a dynamic that they don't have? Is it John Goodman trying to be different? Or is the relationship just so, like, I think that's a fascinating...
Maybe, I mean, is it H.I.?
It's Herbert I. McDonough.
Yeah.
Because when he signs the letter at the end,
yeah.
He signs it, your love, Herbert.
Maybe he's just a proper gent.
Yeah. And even when John Goodman, Gale, is giving high shit about, like, taking shit from his wife, and, like, you two are in a very weird relationship, he's... Looking from it at it, yes, selfishly, but also from the perspective of, like, I don't mean to be rude. However, this is how I see your relationship. Yeah. Like, he's like a bro.
He's always a bro.
Yeah.
John Goodman's not a bro in any movie except the one he's not, which is Cloverfield Lane, which I just remembered existed.
A fun fact, was not meant to be a Cloverfield sequel until, like, they shoehorned one.
Which is wild because Overlord, a movie which is on my list because I love Overlord, was meant to be a Cloverfield sequel or prequel, and then it wasn't.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, if you know Cloverfield, you're like, okay. I see where Cloverfield was supposed to be. Now, she's also in Star Wars now.
Is she?
Yeah, she played... the show's Ahsoka, I should know. She played Hera.
Oh, okay.
So the whole couple's in there. It's Obi-Wan and Hera.
I have not... we're back to the Coen brothers. I have not seen every one of their movies. It would not shock me if Frances McDormand is in every one of their movies. Is she in A Serious Man? She has to be. That is a movie about a Jewish family in Minnesota. She has to be. She's married to a Jewish man from Minnesota.
I like actor couples.
Yeah.
I like when they show up in the same things.
In an interview for, I want to say it was Fargo, someone asked Frances McDormand, sorry, go for it.
Michelle Geller, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because her...
Sarah Michelle Geller.
Yeah, she's married to Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes.
Who was in Rebels.
Yes.
And then she played a character in Rebels.
Oh, nice.
The character that the character he plays is like married, common law married to, is played in live action by Mary.
That's awesome. Freddie Prinze Jr. also has the most correct take on Star Wars ever.
Yeah.
It was an interview for, I want to say it was Fargo, and someone asked Frances McDormand, like, was it difficult getting this role? Or, and she said, well, I think the fact that I was sleeping with the director gave me a leg up.
Because she's in so many of them. It's like, hey, Ralph Fiennes, was it hard being in this Wes Anderson? Was it hard to get this Wes Anderson movie role? It's like, no, Wes showed up by a door and said, you're in my next movie.
Yeah. Hey, Ed Norton. Like, was it difficult being in Wes Anderson?
Hey, Samuel Jackson. Is it hard being in a Tarantino film?
You know how you've been in every single one of them except for Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah.
And you auditioned for Reservoir Dogs? Yeah, because he has a cameo in, like, a very, very blinking you'll miss it cameo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Does he?
I think he's at a table. He's like, in when they're filming the Western scene.
Oh, he's there.
I think he's one of the actors at the table. I'll have to rewatch that movie. But I remember every time in theaters, and it's such a quick shot, thinking to myself, is that Samuel L. Jackson? Or is that just a man who looks so much like Samuel L. Jackson?
What a wild question. Was it hard to get the role for that movie? What a wild question to ask someone who's in all the movies and is fucking the director.
Yeah. He's not just fucking, but is married to the director.
Like that's how I assume Mary got the roles, because like her husband's fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, her husband is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, her husband's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He's not fucking Obi-Wan. He's
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Fucking Kenobi.
Yeah, she's fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi.
When the episodes are releasing, people are just like posting so many shots of her just fucking dumper. Like, I didn't even...
So Frances McDormand is in this movie too. She plays Ed's sister Dot, whose husband Glenn is the racist, especially against the Polish, but also against everyone else. He got high the job at the sheet metal factory,
which is not a mining job.
No, he drills holes
in
sheet metal with Bubba from Blood Simple.
The character Bubba from Blood Simple. Yeah. It's a connected universe.
He survived.
Yeah, and so they brought him in here.
He's in witness protection.
I'm going to start treating every movie by the same director as if I see the same actor as...
They're in witness protection.
They're in witness protection.
We absolutely should do that. That's a great bit. Especially if they canonically take place in the same universe. They're either twins and one of them is...
Or maybe I'm just going to say they're all twins. That's also really fucking funny to me.
So, Frances McDormand is in this movie. She plays Edwina's sister, Dot.
What a terrible thing to name your children.
It's probably short for Dorothy.
Both of these. This is Edwina. This is Dot.
It's probably Edwina and Dorothy.
Hmm.
Dot is like, she and Glenn have like too many children, like six kids of all different ages, and they're all rambunctious.
It is. I was watching this. I'm like, is this like up until this point, it's been a weirdly pro kid movie in my opinion, which is any movie that says you should have a kid. But then suddenly they're like, let's make a segment where like kids are bad.
But it's the first time it becomes real to high.
Polish ally in the scene, by the way. He really says, you know what, I don't get it. Just shuts him down.
That is how you shut down racist jokes.
But like,
just explain the joke to
me. It's all these kids, watching these kids go around. See, I'm always nervous about saying explain the joke to me, because what if it's funny? What did they explain it?
Then it's funny.
Fuck.
Then it's funny.
Fuck. This is
Listen,
fuck.
If the joke is funny, the joke is funny.
But there's like.
Is it more funny than it is offensive?
Is the first time we see the kids, them just beating on his car, is that literally the first shot we see
basically?
The kids? Yeah, there's a bunch, all these kids are awful. And I'm like, oh, man.
I think it's a few things. It's one, that Dot has all of this parenting advice, yet her kids are awful. And it's the first time parenting becomes real to High. And so he's seeing how badly it can go.
Funnily enough, a fellow famous Arizona Bill Keen, writer of Family Circus, often mentioned people in the newspaper circle, newspaper comic circle that I tread in, often talk about how, like, man, first, Family Circus doesn't want you to have kids. Except that one where it mentions Warhammer for no apparent reason.
What?
I'll find it.
No,
keep,
okay.
Keep talking. Yeah, keep talking.
And High is, like, asking Glenn about parentage. Well, they're both asking the two members of the couple about the name. And they've been calling him High Junior or Ed Junior. We're calling Ed, you know, like Edward. We just like the name. And at one point, Glenn and High go for a walk. And Glenn starts telling more racist Polak jokes. And High is having a panic attack, essentially.
Oh, yeah, it's rough to see such blatant racism.
I agree. But he's spiraling about upcoming parenthood and is asking, like, how do you do it? Like, do you ever question every decision you've ever made into your life up until this point? And Glenn tries to get that Glenn and Dot are swingers and they're trying to swing with, it's so weird. Listen, you can be a swinger, do your swinging lifestyle. I don't care. Keep family out of it. I think swingers and polyamory should have the same rules. No close friends or family. They should be off limits.
Swing your sister.
And it is at the suggestion of their swinging that Nick Cage does the only correct response and punches Glenn in his stupid racist face, breaks his nose, probably loses his job. We later learn officially loses his job.
Don't need it. You can go get a job working with your true allies, the pierogi makers. Become a pierogi man. Support your... You're obviously a friend of the Polish people. They won't let you down.
Anyway. So, is... next is the... the grocery store, right? When he's robbing the... Yes. Because he's pretty sure he's going to get fired. And they need to buy Huggies for Nathan Jr. And... High has been missing his old crime life. He's a dog.
That's exciting.
He's a dog caged. He's been driving by convenience stores that aren't on his way home because he used to rob convenience stores. That's what got him into prison. So he tries to rob the convenience store. Then ensues one of the greatest car chases ever.
Up there for sure.
I don't even know if I can name all of the sequence of events that happen. It's just because everything happens so fast.
I remember the dog sticking out to me.
So let's see what I can remember. So he tries to rob the convenience store. The clerk calls the cops, or he presses the button to call the cops. And the cops come while Ed is watching him try and rob the convenience store. Ed drives away. The cops show up. The clerk also has a gun. Nick Cage
like
starts...
a big ass fucking pistol.
Like a rifle, right? Or like a shotgun.
I thought it was like a pistol. I thought it was like this.
Oh, I thought he was holding it like... This is not an audio podcast. But I thought he was holding it like this.
No, it might have been.
But... has like this big ass gun, right? And Nick Cage bolts it. He is running away from the cop. And at one point, he jumps the fence to this dog leashed that is inches away from his face. And so he navigates around the yard to jump out the other side. The dog becomes...
And the whole time that music he's playing, like the cowboy.
Yeah. I will have to look. Give me 2 seconds. Is this the first? Did Carter Burwell do Blood Simple? Yes, he did. Never mind. It's the same. Basically, he does all of their. He's their music guy.
Hmm.
Oh, Blood Simple was his first movie. Interesting.
man, he got it set. He was like, you know what? As a composer, I'm made. Yeah, day one.
So the dog becomes untethered, and then he runs, and then Nick Cage runs through just a random person's house, just like opens their door, goes through their house, escapes through their basement, just
as you do.
It almost in like that Evil Dead tracking shot where they run through the cabin, but not quite. Also, you can definitely tell that Sam Raimi and the Coen brothers were working together at the same, like, yeah, during this period, because there were so many shots in this scene specifically, but across this movie where it like has the Evil Dead like bike shot, where I'm like, oh, that is Sam Raimi through and through. So he goes through the house. He has dropped the Huggies at this point. He goes through the house, collects like three or four other dogs, all chasing him and the cop. He runs into Ed decides to turn around and pick him up. He runs into the grocery store. A cop runs into him. He goes through the aisles to steal another thing of Huggies. The cop stops him at the aisle. By the way, is shooting through the aisle.
Yeah.
There's, I don't know if there's people in those
aisles.
It's
a cop.
But yeah, 100%. I know. Nick Cage is trying to steal another thing of Huggies for Nathan Jr. Has to throw it at the cop in order to escape, does so, gets picked up by Ed. They then swing around. He opens the door. The original Huggies are still in the road. He leans down, picks it up, shut the door. They make it to safety. The entire time, Ed is just reading him the riot act. Like, you're a father now. We need to be stable for this baby. High is like, I'm a stallion. You can't tame me. Also, this kid's just bad, a little bit bad too.
Crime baby. Which will cross over with Molcop.
They get home. Gail and Evel are staying the night. He was able to talk Ed into letting them stay one or two nights. Longer than I would have been able to be talked into. However, that's a completely reasonable amount of time, especially knowing they got they escaped. They're wanted. Ed reads the criminal brothers the riot act. Like, I got nothing against you personally, but you're wanted and I'm not letting you around my kid. Get the fuck out of my house. You have until I'm going to give him shots, or I'm going to like get medicine stuff for him tomorrow. By the time I get back, you better be gone. And that is when Gail talks to High about the bank heist. John Goodman is just a bro. Like, listen, I got nothing against your wife personally, but it very much seems like maybe a cop and a criminal aren't the best combination, especially now when you have a kid in the mix.
That kid's going to be fucked up.
Yeah. Well, that kid's going to be fucked up for so many reasons.
No, I won't remember none of this.
Are babies that are abducted but returned as babies, do they hold some
There's no way.
Let's find out.
There's no way a baby remembers.
They may have like a sense memory.
There's nothing going on up there for like the first 3 years.
But you have like sense memory. No. You do though.
It's like a jellyfish.
No, it's not.
It's like a jellyfish till you're three.
You can't, just so you're aware, if you...
You're not even smarter than a bird till you're six.
It happens.
Anyway. I have to see a long-term 7-year study.
So, Lenny returns. He was a biker. We didn't even mention the dream. The dream is so important. How did we not mention it?
He has a dream, which is the entirety of the first Mad Max movie in the middle of this movie. It's really weird. It's like legitimately from like opening credits to closing credits.
So the first night Nathan comes, before he meets his friends again, he has this dream about a bounty hunter chasing after him. And then we later find out that bounty hunter is real.
Which is, you know, I guess bounty hunters were a bigger thing back then. You don't really hear about them anymore.
They were they may have been a bigger thing. They also, like...
After Dog died.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Famous bounty hunting accident.
Yeah, he was fighting Nick Cage and he pulled a grenade.
Yeah, killed the whole industry. kill the whole industry off.
I love that we return to Leonard like every 20 minutes. Just like, we're going to have an entire movie go on. But then it's like, ah, what's going on with this guy?
He's just like out of place. He's, why is he here?
Because why not?
I know. It's really good.
It's good.
I just wanted to be in the room as they develop the character. At what point did they decide he just looked filthy?
So, do you know how the Coen brothers write scripts?
Final draft?
No, they write them. Basically, they write multiple scripts at the same time. And when they have writer's block with one script, they just go to another one. Mm-hmm. Which is how, like, they have periods where they can have, like, three movies, like, in 3 years. And then they go through, like, a couple year droughts. Is the wrong word. But, like, a couple year gaps. I am convinced that they don't outline their scripts until at least the first or second 100%. Draft is done. They don't know where it's going.
As a pants of the seat writer myself, 100%. I see my writing process in their movies. I'm like, okay, I see that this is draft 7. Big Lebowski, draft 7. I see you got there. Because there's a point where like, oh, fuck, what do we do with the nihilists? You got to bring in what's the climax of this movie? Fuck, we forgot about the nihilists. Just put them in one thing. We'll make it one thing.
But they have this energy of you can never predict where it's going because they can't predict where it's going.
They're just writing as they go. You don't need an outline, really. That's a myth.
You don't need one, sure.
You can just... As long as you're okay having like 10 drafts of something.
Well, you should have 10 drafts of something even if you have an outline, yeah. But sure.
But like excessive amounts of drafts without an outline. You're really going to need a draft. You're really going to need to like revise those drafts. They don't get lighter. Each one's like, fuck.
So Lenny invades Nathan's office and gives him an offer he can't refuse and threatens to like sell his kid on the black market.
Yeah. I didn't know about that's how bounty hunters work, but apparently you just go to people and say, I'm going to bounty hunt for you.
Well, that there is a reward that's already being offered.
And if they say no, you're like, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, that's how Leonard Smalls works.
He looks like a dirty Neanderthal.
Yeah. Glenn returns to fire High when he's like, by the way, you're fired. I was just like, I assumed that.
Yeah.
I assumed.
I was going to show up for work.
Yeah. And also, I found out Nathan Jr., like, who Nathan Jr. is, and you're going to give us the baby because Dot wants to raise another baby, and there's something wrong with my semen. Something happened.
Greedy.
Something happened with his semen.
It's greedy. You already have, like, there was five an
accident.
Kids.
Yeah, there was an accident. Well, they're getting too old to cuddle. They're getting too old to cuddle.
They goon too much.
Yeah.
Get a goon blockage.
Or he was just so racist. A Polish curse was placed upon him.
You can be generally, I mean, there's tons of races with kids, but specifically, you gotta be careful against those Eastern Europeans. Because if you tell too many racist jokes about a group of Eastern Europeans, Russians, Ethiopians, Romanians, a small old grandmother will come up to you in a babushka and curse your family.
Exactly.
It's what happened to my family, even though we are Polish. And that's why no one's happily married.
Sure.
Because he wouldn't give him the eggs. I told you this, right?
Yeah, the egg sandwich.
The egg sandwich, yeah. She went, babushka, babushka, and cursed us. It's this fucked up thing to do, man. Like, come on, dude. We're all one people. So, we're all suffering under the white man here. You're going to curse this babushka lady?
And now, in addition to robbing the bank, the brothers are going to steal Nathan Jr. for the ransom money.
And not a well thought out plan.
No. And in the fight in the house, I think John Goodman throws what might be my favorite punch in cinematic history when he's fighting High and he cocks back, his elbow slams into the window, and then his fist just goes through the drywall and gets stuck. That right there might be my favorite. Just that whole wah, pow, pow. Like you saw him have the idea, you saw him execute the idea, and you saw him realize it was a bad
idea. And that
idea.
Was just John Goodman.
Yeah,
that's how John Goodman punches.
All in real time.
He punches a lot in these movies. Because does he fight in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Probably.
Because he fights, famously, he fights in Big Lebowski. Mm-hmm. Like, well. Which makes sense. I guess he was in the Vietnam War, as he says so often.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be bad for the character if he wasn't actually, like, good at fighting.
So they rob the convenience. So Nathan Jr. has an accident in the car, and they're robbing the convenience store for the diapers and some money. And he has the guy count down from like 800 something. And then when they return, he's at like 700 something, and he's like, I'm gonna stop counting. And then he goes up, and they return, so he starts counting again. That's just a fun little thing. And then they're going to rob the bank, right? Yes, because they have to return because they left the baby on the roof. They left the baby on the roof, Matthew.
The baby, you're concerned about leaving the baby behind once and then proceed to forget the baby.
And they robbed the bank with the baby.
Yeah, because they're like, we don't want to leave it in the car.
And I love freeze, get on the ground. Yeah. Well, which is it?
Where's the tellers? We're on the ground.
Shut the fuck up, get on the ground. Do you want us to freeze or get on the ground? Shut the fuck up.
So I should say, don't try shit, get on the ground.
Yeah.
It accomplishes the same thing as freeze. There's some tips for you bank robbers out there.
They rob the bank and they leave the baby. They forgot the baby again.
Which is wild because it's in a thing. It's not like it's just a small, easily losable child. You know, babies on their own, you can lose them between the couch cushions. But, like, it's in a fucking car. It's a thing.
So, Ed wants to divorce High, whether or not they get the baby. She doesn't care about herself anymore. She doesn't care about High. She still loves him, but she just wants to make sure that baby's safe. It's spoken like a true mother. And they go back to the bank, and Nathan Jr. is safe. Thank God. This movie is part horror movie. Genuinely, everything they do with the baby scares me so much. The Coen brothers could direct an excellent horror movie.
I think babies are pretty resilient. Yeah.
Okay, so
they have to be, right?
They not only do they
caveman
find the baby,
babies didn't die,
but that what
caveman babies didn't die. We didn't have car seats back then. You have to assume a baby's somewhat resilient.
Anyway,
danger.
So. Mad Max Lenny appears.
It's so weird that he called him his first name because I only remembered him by like his last name. I'm like, oh, Smalls.
He shows up out of nowhere, but he's fighting. He's
got the war rig.
He's fighting Ed and High for that baby.
I don't think you can do that as a bounty hunter. I think that's illegal.
I don't think he cares.
He's carrying grenades.
I don't think he especially cares. But he, like, they're fighting, and Ed manages to get Nathan Jr. and runs far away into the car, and then High still has to tackle Lenny, and eventually Lenny's kicking the ever-loving shit out of him. He's gonna kill High. he is like holding High, about to slam him down. He throws High away, and it's revealed that High had pulled the pin on one of the grenades, but he doesn't know which one because he has like,
which implies an older grenade because new grenades are it's harder to do that.
Yeah,
they have a lot of safety features because it turns out that soldiers were terrified of the grenades. They would tape the grenade handles down.
Yeah.
And the army's like, well, we're gonna make a better grenade because you guys can't be doing that.
Well, yeah. And he blows up into a billion pieces, and there's just like legs in baby shoes. Also, Lenny has baby shoes hanging off of his
not saying no, he's about him.
Vest. Yeah, but like he blows up, you see like an arm and a leg and some gut entrails, and High and Ed return Nathan Jr., and Nathan Sr. finds them in the room.
He's like, hey, don't get a divorce.
Yeah, he's like, you stole him, but like you brought him back. I love my wife. He truly is just like, don't get a divorce, I love my wife.
He's a love your wife guy.
He's like, marriage is hard, especially with kids, but I love my wife. Don't get a divorce. And they don't, because High has a dream that
one day
the two brothers
Ebony and Ivory working together,
the two brothers return to prison. They go back the way they came. but he sees a distant future that's kind of fuzzy. Well, Nathan Jr. gets a football when he's like 6 from a mysterious couple who asked to be anonymous. Yeah. Obviously, he's high in it. But then he dreams about the two of them, and it's fuzzier down the... It's fuzzier far into the future, and it's an old couple sitting on a couch as their children and grandchildren come visit them in a faraway land. And he doesn't know where it is, but maybe it's Utah.
A dark ending if there's ever been one. Moving to Utah.
This movie rules.
It does rule.
This movie's so good. It's so interesting that these are entirely different genres, but... You could not tell me that they were directed by the same people, and I would immediately know they're directed by the same people.
Yeah,
they have the same. It's a tone thing.
What's it like with Wes Anderson? How all his movies are like different,
but they all look the same, basically.
Yeah, that's like his directing thing. But they're different genres.
Okay.
The latest one was a political crime thriller. The previous one was a movie about a play. And also aliens.
A weird dramedy. The one before that was a weird dramedy. And the one before that was... I didn't see it because it was a parody of a Wes Anderson movie. It's not real. Well,
That's like saying every Coen Brothers movie is in different genres because they're wacky hijinks.
Well, no. A weird dramedy... A dramedy is a genre, though.
I wouldn't label the Phoenician Scheme as a dramedy.
I would label Asteroid City as a dramedy.
I'd label it as a drama movie, not like drama is in it. That's the genre. It's a movie about drama.
Okay.
Because it's about a play.
I would label it a dramedy.
And then there's the dog movie.
Which I would also label a dramedy.
No, that's a Japanese movie.
They're entirely different genres. Miller's Crossing is also... Their first three movies really set the tone for everything they're going to make ever in the future.
Just wait till our next movie. We'll throw the whole thing for a loop.
Yeah.
It's gonna be compared to Neon Demon. It's gonna be weird.
The next Coen Brothers movie? Yeah. Are they coming back together? Because I know Ethan...
What if they came back together and made like a Refn film? That'd be wild.
Wild. I know Ethan and his wife, Trisha, made...
Have you seen all the Refn films?
I've seen a couple. I think I've seen Bronson.
Have you seen Only God Forgives?
Yes. I don't like that movie.
That's a movie I like. Not good.
Sure. Sure.
That's the one Refn film I'm like, you know what? I liked it. This is like no value whatsoever in cinema. I think Neon Demon has value. I like Neon Demon.
Sure. I think Neon Demon
another Nicolas Cage vehicle.
Nicolas Cage is in that movie?
Yeah, he's like the motel owner.
I thought there was...
Isn't that Nicolas Cage?
That's Keanu Reeves.
Fuck, you're right.
Okay.
They both have peers where they have long black hair.
Okay. I was like, I don't remember Nicolas Cage at all in that movie. Yeah, I don't like that movie. It's far too surface level observation, and I feel like it's all style, no real substance.
Oh, I love that. It's one of those audacious things where you're like, we're gonna do like a really artsy shot of pedophilic necrophilia. And it's like
I literally, as that was happening, I out loud watching the movie in my dorm room went, oh, come on.
I was like, hell yeah.
No, I was like,
let's go, Refn. Let's go, Refn. Put this in a theater.
Dude, no, I hate the Neon
There are two
Demon.
Types of cinema I appreciate. Like the cinema that is good, interesting, artistic. And the cinema, which is just like, let's see what I can get away with. And both are my favorite types of cinema. Good artsy, like Coen Brothers, or like just interesting films.
Sure.
And then movies where it's like, you wanted to see how far you could push. Because inside of me are two wolves. One who wants to make interesting stuff, and one who wants to push the envelope.
Sure.
I just love being like, I wonder what I can get away with in this movie.
I think ideally you should do that. You should push the envelope by making interesting stuff.
Yeah, but sometimes you just want to push the envelope.
No, I have seen no value in that. I truly see no value in like just like where's the line. If I'm going to find out where the line is, I want to make a statement.
I think you just got to be interesting with it. It's got to be weird. It's got to be something that hasn't been done before. I don't like when you push an envelope and like, I'm just going to make something really gory and gross.
No, sure.
And so everyone does that. But when you're like, I'm going to come up with a brand new way to push the envelope, you're like, all right, All right. It's why I've never seen them, but I like the concept of Human Centipede 2 better than Human Centipede 1.
Because it's a film, like, it's about the first movie?
Yeah, and I think the third one's about the second movie.
Yes, it is.
And I'm really obsessed with them, where they're like, each movie, the previous movie is going to be a movie in the universe.
Up until, I saw a Hudsucker Proxy fairly recently. Up until Hudsucker Proxy, this was my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
I think mine's still Big Lebowski.
That's so fair. Big Lebowski, I think I've said this before, is a movie that I like.
It's definitely one of my top comfort movies.
Interesting. I'll watch that movie. I think I've seen it twice. And I'm like, this is good. I like this movie.
It's part of my Thanksgiving. I put in some Mumford and Sons.
And you listen to Big Lebowski?
I watch Big Lebowski.
Or you listen to Mumford and Sons and watch Big Lebowski.
And I print out a bunch of pictures of Squanto and hang them all around the house.
That's so fair.
It's his birthday.
I'm aware. So the nature of this experiment, why I wanted to pick the first two movies, was to try and compare and contrast.
There's enough that it's like, it is such a wild comparison.
It's so,
I picked up enough through the Miller.
But they have the exact same, like, tone.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, like, not genre. The camera work is similar.
They remain the same cast iron pot.
Yes. There's something about, like, the dialogue style mixed with, like, I keep saying tone, but I need to think of another word. Like, I'm trying to think of something specific.
Tenor?
Sure. But I'm trying to think of a specific instance. I don't know. I wish I had more. One, we should be wrapping up. The lady texted me. She is, like, getting hungry and antsy. So we should be wrapping up soon. I wish I had a better word for it than tone. But there is something.
Vibe,
I guess. But there's something innate. Like, It kind of, I don't know. There are people who don't think auteur theory is real.
It is stupid.
I agree. I think auteur theory has its flaws. I think it's deeply misogynistic, not necessarily in the theory itself, but the fact that we've never really been able to, like, expand outside of, like, a bunch of white dudes, which we should be able to now.
Yeah, we got Jordan Peele.
I mean, sure, but I mean, like it doesn't. Many women don't really get an opportunity to have these long careers that you can, like, do that. There are a couple who have, and there are a couple who've had short careers that you can definitely tell. But there's. I'll say vibe. There's a vibe. There's something innate in these two movies that you could tell me, you could not tell me they were directed by the same person, and I would immediately know they were directed by the same person. Yet they're so different. They're totally different genres. Have you seen Miller's Crossing?
No.
Okay. It is a movie I don't love. I think it needed to be bigger, but that's beside the point. I'll rewatch Miller's Crossing at some point, probably not for this pod, but there's, you can see it through all of their movies, but, like, basically all of their movies exist on the spectrum from Blood Simple to Raising Arizona. And they are the two poles, and, like, all of their other movies kind of exist somewhere in the middle.
I appreciate you saying poles and not Pollock.
Thank you. Anyway, I'm blanking on exact verbiage, and I love this movie. I like Blood Simple a lot. Hudsucker Proxy is one of my favorite movies ever. And A Serious Man is the same thing. Yeah. Like, you watch A Serious Man, it's like, that's the guy who did Blood Simple.
Yeah. It's just the flavor, it's the vibe.
Like, Tarantino has his dialogue and he has his camera moves.
It's like how all LaCroix's taste like LaCroix. But the Coen brothers don't even have
that. Sure. But the Coen brothers don't really have that style. Like, they have a style. Like, they have a way their characters talk and, like, a way they move the camera. But it's not as flashy as something like a Tarantino is. But there's something like, it just proves auteur theory. This is a long walk for a short drink of water. It's auteur theory is real.
Yeah. Obviously.
There are people who don't believe it, and they're wrong. Yeah, for real. Do you have any final thoughts?
Don't steal babies.
Agreed.
Also, please write to NBC or CBS and tell them, in a month or so, after we submit the pilot, and tell them that you want to see Mole Cop.
Okay. watch this movie.
I think I could get Nicolas Cage as Mole Cop. He does like anything.
You might be able to.
He'd be really, can you imagine the close up of him digging? He'd be good. He'd be really good as Mole Cop.
He would. Anyway, watch this movie. That's really all I have to say about it. This movie rules. The Coen brothers rule. They have a couple missteps, but like they have a really solid filmography. I think Hayao Miyazaki is the greatest living filmmaker of all time. The Coen brothers, when together, are close. They're in the discussion. I hope I'm able to edit something cohesive out of this. Do you want to do socials?
I'll do socials. You can find us on Instagram at Two Men Movie Podcast. You can find us on YouTube, Two Men and a Movie Podcast. A little trickier there. A little trickier to find us. You can find me at Midwest_Magicians, where I post Plastic Man and accept various X-Reader or X-Matthew scripts.
So you want them to submit the X-Reader now to your Instagram?
Or the Gmail at twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Okay. Submit it wherever. You can just post it somewhere and then tag me or send me a link.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. You'll get your cash. That's all you're doing it for. You have no love for the art.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Lemonade at harrisonpoole.com. HarrisonPoole.
I'm going to change my username to make it easier.
Or on Letterboxd, HDPOOLE124. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. I hope I'm able to edit something cohesive out of my wild ramblings. Anyways, thank you for listening. So long and good night.
Hugs and kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.